Festival with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics. Hi and welcome to episode number 111 of Robots. I am Jana and today we will have a look at the Robotics Festival at EPFL in Lausanne, Switzerland. But first, as always, here is an update on what's been happening in robotics with Christine.
Thank you, Jana. Researchers at Harvard University have created a robot that can change color to either blend in with or stand out from its surroundings. In a study published in the journal Science, the researchers show how a palm-sized robot made from a translucent soft material can be equipped with simple microfluid networks. By injecting the network with suitable colored solutions, the robot can change its color, contrast, pattern, apparent shape, luminescence, and surface temperature. For now, the colored solutions were manually prepared by scientists. By using multiple layers, patterns matching a very wide variety of backgrounds can be achieved. Another advantage is that the method allows simultaneous color changes in both the visible and infrared spectrum, a capability that biological organisms do not have. The new work begins to imitate the functions, although not the anatomies, of the color-changing animals found in many sea creatures, including octopus, cuttlefish, and squid. In other news, Swiss researchers have continued work on integrating more robotic sensing and actuation technology into livestock management. In a project at the University of Geneva, researchers successfully developed and tested a collar that measures a sheep's heartbeat. By integrating information from multiple sheep in the flock's heartbeat was found to be significant enough to detect information such as an imminent wolf attack on the herd. The collar allows alerting the shepherd via text messages. In addition, the collars can be equipped to spray wolf repellent. The system is intended for owners of small stocks. Prototype testing is expected to commence in early 2013 in Switzerland and France. For more information on the new robot from Harvard University or the new sheep's collar from the University of Geneva, have a look at our website at www.robotspodcast.com.
The EPFL Robotics Festival, which started in 2008, now attracts around 15,000 people every spring. Children from the ages of 4 to 16 are invited to participate in one of the many workshops on robot building, programming, or electronics. And the whole family can walk through and have a peek at the exhibits or visit the robot shows. Sabine talked to Francesco Mondada, who is the director of the Miniature Mobile Robots Group at EPFL and the creator of the festival.
Hi Francesco, great to be talking with you after yet another successful robotics festival. We interviewed you last year about your excellent work in educational robotics. For those who don't remember, can you tell us what this festival of robotics is?
So the Robotic Festival is an event where we have people with a passion for robotics, sharing this passion with the public, basically. So it's more than an event on robots, it's an event on people loving robots and sharing their expertise or their experience. And this is what the festival is about and what makes it successful. People really feel this passion and are enthusiastic about this.
What happened during this year's edition?
So this year we had, like every year, shows, exhibitions, workshops. The workshops are the most demanded activity because people really want to come and do something, especially kids, especially their parents, we can say. can say. And this year we had the same mix. We had an additional animation for everybody, which was to build small robots with 10 bricks. And this was very funny because the adults really were skeptical about this done by the kids, but the kids were enthusiastic. And then at the end, we had a really great event at all the level, the workshop, 2,000 places in the workshop, and then more than 6,000 places in the shows. We had the air jelly from Festo this year, which was just wonderful. It's not a very complicated robot. I was surprised that my kids understood how it was working. So there was nothing really incredibly complicated, but it was just beautiful and impressive. So that's exactly what we look at the festival, something which is great, impressive, that people can understand. That's the best, because we can really show that robotics is accessible and people can understand technology.
You mentioned the bricks. What are some of the other things kids are doing at these workshops?
During the workshop, kids can solder, can program, can build, there are plenty of activity, can dismantle systems. And this year I got some feedback of adults saying, why this is limited to kids? I would like to do it myself. And I told them, just apply, we don't check the age. So half of the people registering for the Picobots, the small construction robots, were adults. So, yeah.
You had 15,000 people this year. Why do you think this festival is so successful?
I think the point number one is the passion of the people that are at the festival, that are animating the festival. So this year we had nearly 600 people of staff to manage the festival, and 350 are volunteers that are passionate about robotics. The other are students who could also were paid to help, but we are also many students that are really passionate about this activity. So I think this is the trick, is to have people who really want to share their enthusiasm about robotics and technology in general.
Do you have any fun examples of something that the public said or something that happened during this festival this year?
No, I think that we had many, so more than every year we had huge feedbacks by email and also during the festival. This year we doubled the space, and we redesigned fully the registration system, and basically nobody had to wait anything. So people were just enthusiastic to be able to move around freely. The only criticism I got was there is too much things to see, and we cannot see everything in one day. But I'm satisfied with this type of criticism. It's not a problem. But it's becoming huge, and it's very we got a huge number of positive feedback, because it was cool, and I got also extremely good feedback from the exhibitors, so the people making the show, etc., saying the public is very interested, it's very attentive, it's silent during the shows, etc. So people were impressed by the atmosphere that was there, both from the side of the staff and the side of the visitor, which was very good.
Do kids know what robots are now? Do you still have to explain that to them?
I think that you don't have only one explanation. I think that what is important is that the kids get a little bit an understanding that, first, they have to know that they can understand. Because even with the adults that we had some discussion, and even the adults say, okay, in any case, I cannot understand robotics. So they even don't do the effort. Okay, I think that we have to pass the message that this is not so incredible, that people can understand what's behind, at least a part of it, and they can get an idea of. So the Ergeli this year was not an incredibly complicated device. It was quite simple, but quite efficient, impressive. So I think that this is the message that we have to pass. And if the kids understand that they can dismantle something, understand what's inside, etc., then the goal is reached. We don't have to explain them all the robots and all the mechanisms, but they have to. We have to trigger this curiosity and destroy this fear that there is about complex technology.
Do you think all these kids are going to become roboticists, and in 10 years we're going to have a huge wave at EPFL?
Frankly speaking, I don't care. As soon as they keep this curiosity, we will have enough of them coming as roboticists, I think. But what is important is that they keep this curiosity. We have many of them which will not come at EPFL for sure. But there are plenty of them who are interested even to make other careers in the technical field. And this is important. So we had this year, this was a little bit new. We had plenty of professional schools who came presenting the school, etc. For those kids who want to do a career not in academics and engineering, but more in a practical job related to technology. And I think this is important, that we have also this level of support.
What were some of the interactions with the NCCR with this year's edition?
So the NCCR was very good in bringing the community, so the several labs that are involved, and we had more people from Zurich than usually. And then many tools that are developed within the NCCR, for instance, for education, has been used in the workshops. We had many workshops organized by NCCR people, and we use the festival as a test bench for some experience for the NCCR. For instance, the small robot, the Picabots, we had two possible activities, one with a challenge and one with a creative activity, and we recorded every kid on which activity, what choice he made, and we have statistical data on the job of the parents, on the age, etc., and we will now work with some people in sociology to analyze a little bit what is motivating for the kids in this type of activity and which kids choose which type of activity. So I think that we will understand a little bit better how to attract kids and what type of profile we attract with what type of activity. And this is something that we will bring within the NCCR, and the NCCR will bring, I think, to the community, to the robotics community in general.
What would you like to see for next year's edition, if there's anything more that you can do?
This and the last year, we pushed the participation of the teachers. So we tried to involve the public school teacher within the festival to help them to use the tool that we use in the school. My dream is to see this diffusion of the festival into the school more and more. So we got extremely good feedback this year. We had even now calls from school. We want to have a Picabot animation in our school. We want to have this and that. So my dream is really to be able to extend this local and peak activity over all the year, and be able to spread this to all the people that do not come to the festival, because basically those who come to the festival are those who are already a little bit interested by robotics and technology. And if we can spread a little bit this activity also to other people that are not necessarily in the field, then I think it would be great.
How do you think that can happen? Is it about making the kid, or is it about making the team of people who go around?
I think that there is a big problem with the teacher. They are not trained at all for this. They fear technology as an additional complex tool that they will not be able to manage, or that kids manage better than them, because this is also a big fear from the teachers, and we have to manage a way to help them to acquire these competences, to acquire confidence in the tools that we propose to them, and give them material to do their job in a more efficient way using technological tools.
You have a lot of great projects at your lab. Can you tell us a bit about some of the more recent developments?
So we have plenty of developments in the field of education, of course, related to the festival, related to the activity in the schools. But we also look in general to the use of robotics in daily life. And we explore a way which is a little bit different from the classical approach, which is bringing robotics in everyday objects. And we are doing a set of experiments now, also with kids, bringing a robot in their sleeping room and helping them to tidy up the room. So we are doing some experiments that seems very positive at the level of the acceptance from the kids and at the level of the acceptance from the parents. And I hope that we will also bring a little bit new ideas into robotics in that way.
I would have loved to have that. What does that robot look like?
It looked like just a box. It's just an interactive box. And but the box is happy when something is thrown inside. So kids understand very quickly. And if you put this in facing a kid, after 5-10 minutes, all the toys are in the box. No problem.
That's smart. Okay, thanks, Francesco.
Thank you to you.
And now, let's go on a tour of this year's festival to have a look around and hear firsthand from some of the people on site with our reporter, Amanda.
Hi, Sven. How are you doing?
Hi, Amanda.
Can you tell us what you're showing here?
So here we're showing basically a demo about robots that are pulling each other.
Okay.
So it's a simple demo that basically uses a simple interaction system to show something that is emerging, so robots making
long queues kind of, yeah.
Of
looks really nice. So this is very interactive. I'm sure this is an awesome project for the kids. What do you think they're learning from this?
They're learning to place their finger in front of the robot, basically, but I hope they're learning a bit how sensors work and how motors are actuated depending
on
how the finger is placed in front of the robot.
Very nice. There's a lot of work behind these small robots, and often the ideas behind them are very visionary. What do you do to convey this concept to the public?
Well, here we keep it simple, so we try to show how simple programs, simple interactions can create emerging behaviors inside, so for collective robotics in our example. But we try to keep it as simple as we can.
To get core concepts. Great. Okay, thank you very much then.
You're welcome.
Now we're going to go see Adrian, see what he's doing. Hi, Adrian.
Hello.
How you doing?
Fine.
Can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing here?
Well, here I'm trying to demonstrate an application of a robot that finds us an odor source.
An odor source, right. So your odor source is actually ethanol, right?
Yes.
Right.
Which is quite funny to some of our audience, especially when the robot comes towards them.
Right. And you have a fan there creating a plume so that the robot is actually trying to detect the plume and drive up the plume,
yes.
Right?
In fact, on the robot we have two sensors. One is for detecting the odor source, the odor in itself. And the other one is for detecting the wind direction.
Right.
And it needs these two informations to implement a biologically inspired algorithm, which is inspired by the moths.
Mm-hmm.
The moths, in order to find a source of food.
Right.
Oh, it managed to find it. In order to find the source, it will go in the direction of the wind,
right.
While it senses the smell, and when it loses, it starts spiraling until it finds it again, and then it just alternates between the two.
Right. So this is actually a pretty impressive piece of work in terms of hardware and software. What are the future applications for this?
Well, we might be still a bit far from applications. The closest applications that we could immediately go towards are for industrial scenes, where you have a pretty well-defined environment. But in the future, the idea would be to use them even in rough terrain for finding mines or for finding different leaks of toxic materials.
Right, yes. Right.
And so on. Applications are many, but we still need to work on the research.
Right. Thank you. Well, thank you very much, Adrian.
Thank you.
Have a nice day. Hey, Adrian.
Hey, Amanda.
How are you doing?
Very good. Very good.
Why don't you tell me a bit about what you're showing to the public today?
Sure. So I'm showing them this Herbo robot.
Right.
So it's kind of a strange robot, actually. They're always a bit surprised to see it. As you can see, it has plenty of protections around it.
Right.
So that is so that it can run into obstacles and even fall on the ground from 2 meters, for example, have some crashes.
Right. It looks very robust. So these are actually flexible bumpers, right?
Definitely. These are bumpers all around it.
Right. Very nice. Hey, hi, Maya. How are you doing?
Hi.
This is an unusual piece of work here. Why don't you tell us a bit about what you're doing?
Okay, so this is a fixed-wing flying robot, which we use in outdoor environments. In a swarming project.
Okay.
So the project is about using flying robots in a search and rescue operation in order to provide a communication relay between the rescuers on the ground and to guide dogs in a search and rescue, which is the first application of robot-animal interaction between dogs and flying robots.
So this is doing the survey and it communicates with the dog?
Yes, and it works everything in a distributed and decentralized way.
Very nice. Nice. What does it tell the dogs to do?
So basically, it performs some kind of attractive trajectories.
Okay.
And the dogs have to be trained to perceive the planes as helpers, and they have to understand those trajectories, and then they have to follow a plane.
So there's a lot of training here involved as well.
Yes, it will be involved. So this is the process just started, but we hope dogs will obey us.
It sounds almost like a new domain in robotics.
Yes, it's completely
it's like
new.
Not human-robot interaction, but dog
animal-robot interaction.
Very interesting.
Because so far, they just interacted between bugs, cockroaches, and the robots in this way.
Okay,
so
very
this
nice.
This is the first application of interaction with mammals and flying robots.
Sounds nice. Looking forward to seeing the results.
Yeah.
Thanks, Maya.
Thank you.
Hi, Alexandro.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Fine, and you?
Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're showing the public today?
Okay, so here we have two robots. Basically, a lamprey robot and a salamander robot.
Okay.
Which are based on the same modules. And the idea is that they are modular, so that we have every module that is completely independent and can be interchanged as needed.
Okay.
For example, if we have any failure.
Right.
And the salamander is based on the same modules, and with the difference that it has another kind of module for the legs.
Okay.
Which features the same degrees of freedom as the body for the movement of the body, but we have the two rotating limbs to have limbs.
Okay.
So, and this vaguely reproduces the structure of a real salamander.
Okay.
And the main purpose of this robot is to use it to study neurobiological systems. So we have inside the robot a mathematical model of the spinal cord of a salamander. And the idea is that as in all vertebrates, the rhythmic locomotion is controlled by the spinal cord. So we have the brain sending very simple signals to the spinal cord, and the spinal cord generating audio-oscillatory signals for the muscles in this so-called central pattern generators. We have here a mathematical model of the spinal cord of a salamander at some high level inside the robot.
Mm-hmm.
And the user with the remote control is the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And sends these very simple signals to the robot.
Okay.
And this system inside the robot will generate the oscillatory signals for all the muscles, all the motors in this case, and make the robot move.
So you're saying it's modular. Does that mean it's completely distributed or is it somewhat centralized?
This is something that will come.
Okay.
For now, the main part is that we generate the main we have the main controller inside the head, which is this CPG trajectory generator.
Right.
And so this is the centralized part.
Okay.
And then it sends the commands, the set points to all the modules.
And in terms of difference, so you say this is the walking salamander and that's the swimming salamander, if I can kind of generalize it that way?
This is amphibious, it can also swim.
Right,
it
okay.
It seems like this one.
Okay.
Just this one is more efficient because it doesn't have the drag of the
legs. Block, yeah, I see.
Because salamanders swim exactly like lampreys. They just keep the legs in the side of the door, of the
okay.
body.
Okay.
And they swim like lampreys.
So what you're trying to convey here, the concept is actually very, very complex. You have a mathematical model which is trying to model physiological or neurological concepts, I think, which is probably very complex for the public to understand per se. So how are you conveying this information to the kids and all the people who are coming to visit here?
Actually, they seem to understand quite easily this concept
okay.
of having a model of the spinal cord.
Okay, yeah.
Because you can just explain that, that like in all vertebrates, including humans, the rhythmic locomotion, like walking, swimming, and so on, is generated by the spinal cord, and the brain doesn't do a lot.
Okay.
So basically, you don't have to think anything when you walk.
Right.
You don't have to think what muscle you will move now, and so on. That's why it's so complicated, like, to learn to swim when you don't know.
Yeah,
and,
very nice. Yeah.
The idea is that then the brain is there. So you just say that you have the spinal cord model inside the robot and the brain is outside, and the concept is relatively understandable, I think.
Okay. And how do
for
they...
sure, like the small children will just see the funny part of the robot moving, but... that's
absolutely. And how do they react when they see the salamander swimming? What is their first emotion?
So actually, we don't make this salamander swim today because it's we have fissures in the covers and it's not completely waterproof.
Okay.
So we make the lamprey swim.
Okay.
And yeah, most the people are interested. They look at it and so on. They
intrigued, I assume. Yes.
And all the small children try to touch it like an animal, to caress it. And
yes,
so on.
I'm sure. Very nice. Well, thank you very much, Alexander, for your
thank
time.
Thank you.
Okay. So, hi, Roger.
Hello.
How you doing?
Great. Thanks.
Why don't you start off by telling us about what you're showing to the public today?
Mm-hmm. Sure, we brought along two systems.
Okay.
One of them is really a research project that's ongoing in our lab, and the other one is more an educational system. So the research project is about using robotics. Actually, in our group, we use robots as tools
mm-hmm.
and try to gain new insights into neural control of movement. So how does the brain control movements, but also how do people recover after a stroke, for example, so neural injury. And the research project we brought is an assessment tool. So we're using a robot to assess sensory motor function in humans. And this is very interesting because compared to human, the robot can very precisely, quantitatively measure all the interaction parameters. So we can track the movement while we're doing a movement. And the movement is actually a very functional movement. So you have to pick 9 pegs and insert them into 9 holes.
Okay.
So during this movement, we assess all the movement parameters. We can reconstruct the movement, but we also assess the dynamics. So the grip force, for example, you have to actually grip and press when you grab the lever, the little peg, and then as you transport and insert it. And from this, we're trying to get out of this quantitative data, we're trying to get new insights into which parameters are most descriptive of certain impairments and which parameters tell us how the patient evolves over time with therapy.
Is this what you're developing? Are these auxiliary tools for medical use, or is this really for research to you know, derive conclusions about?
So it's really both. I guess our lab's a bit unique in this sense is that we work both on the engineering aspects, but also we're very much interested in the clinical questions and applications. So we developed, actually this device is partially commercial, but we developed the instrumented handle, and now we are using the device. So there's people from our group that go to the clinic, go see the patients, work with the physiotherapists to do these assessments, and our group is now also working on the analysis of this data and combining it with other clinical assessment data that we have, and we are with this going also after some clinical questions. So we're really interested in the whole spectrum.
Okay. This is actually the project that you're working on for the NCCR Robotics, is that?
This is not the project we are working on for the NCCR Robotics. The project for the NCCR Robotics is actually very similar, also very wide scope. We are interested in developing an actuator that could be used in an active knee prosthesis, for example. There is one group working on an active knee prosthesis, more on the control.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a group here in Lausanne working on an assistive orthosis, so for elderly people, to help them in walking. And we are working on the actuator. What we are trying to do is develop an actuator that can behave similar to a real joint. Mm-hmm. So this is very difficult to do with conventional technology, because if you look at the leg, for example, I can swing the leg freely, and as I step down, I have to catch all the weight.
Right.
So this actuator has to change behavior a lot, and this is what we're working on. So there we are on the engineering side, developing this actuator, but we are also developing tools to measure how the knee behaves, and then trying to use that again to apply it on the actuator and then integrate that with a prosthesis.
Okay. Are your methods very hard? Are they well defined through your hardware solutions, or do you work also on software, machine learning, etc. solutions?
We do a bit also of machine learning. I guess we do a bit of everything. It's the difficult part is here really that everything comes together. We are not an advanced machine learning group, but we do mechanical design, mechatronic design, system integration, control, and this is control that is very different from industrial robots control, for example. But also the important thing is really also to take into account the human factors.
Right.
So you have to really take into account how the muscle physiology and everything else works.
So I know that you have worked for a couple of years in Japan. You were active at the ATR in Kyoto, and you've also been active in Switzerland for quite a while in research. Do you think that one could maybe say something about the different approaches that these two countries have towards robotics?
So, well, of course, one thing that most people are aware of is that Japanese just love robots, right? They're much more, people are much more open, I guess, out in the society, and here people are much more worried.
Right.
And that's something that touches us as well, of course, because we can develop the most useful assistive system, and then if people don't put it on because they feel silly walking around with it outside,
there is some stigmatization.
Absolutely. Yeah, and in Japan, I guess you have a bigger acceptance, so they've also been. From my opinion back then, at least, we're investing, you know, huge amounts of money into this kind of technology, and it was extremely dynamic. At the same time, I have to say ATR is a pure research institute, so not a university like here, so from that it's also a bit different. But for me it was unique because it was really a research institute that combined also again robotics and neuroscience, and this is really how I got actually into this field.
Okay. And so basically we're talking about society here and how the acceptance of society actually influences research directions, because that's where the money ultimately flows.
Yes.
In that context, what are you doing here now to convey your concepts to the people who are visiting you here at the festival today?
Well, so we're trying to make things tangible. That's what we do with haptics. So on the one side, they can sit down, try out the system, see what kind of tasks we do and how these robots are used here differently. I guess a lot of people, if you talk about robots, they still think of industrial robots or humanoid robots. So here they can really sit down and try this out, feel this haptic feedback.
Right.
And the other thing is we're also showing an educational system that we use already to make our students aware of this multidisciplinary field of human-machine interaction, where they look both at the engineering and the human factor side. So we have this little setup that we show here as well, where people can try out these theoretical concepts and feel them.
And what are their reactions?
I think so far positive. They love playing around with it a bit too more than the equipment can take sometimes. But I think we do quite a few of these events. We try to be present because it's extremely important, right? The acceptance has to be there. If it's not there, doesn't go any further, and we will need robots as tools in the clinic in the future, because we don't have enough manpower, and it's all becoming too costly.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Roger.
Well, thank you, Matt.
Have a nice day.
You too.
Thank you.
And that's all from the Robotics Festival in Switzerland. Before you go, though, there's one more thing we wanted to tell you. We now have transcripts of our episodes available online on our website, robotspodcast.com. And if you'd like to have a look, simply follow the transcript link right next to the episode title on the website. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time. Until then, goodbye. Festival with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.